and welcome back for another episode of A1 Talks, the Affiliate and Partner Marketing Podcast. I'm Samantha Shearer, Global Marketing Strategist here at A1, back to host my second episode. So hopefully you're as excited to hear from me today as I am to be here. Today's episode is going to cover everyone's favorite topic, advertising disclosure. I know, try to contain your enthusiasm. Specifically, we're going to discuss some of the updated guidelines for influencer and affiliate marketing that were released this summer by the Federal Trade Commission, or FTC, in the US, and what these changes mean. Don't worry, I'm not going to pretend to be an expert on this topic. Instead, I've invited two experts in the space to join us today, so let me introduce you to them now. First up, we have Jen White. Jen is a Chicago-based content creator, influencer, and sales training professional known for her captivating lifestyle content on social platforms like TikTok and Instagram. And last but not least, we're joined by Gary Keibel. Gary is a partner at the law firm Davis & Gilbert LLP and provides clients perspective on cutting-edge issues in digital media, advertising, and technology and privacy. So, Gary, I want to start with a question for you. We have listeners all over the world, some that are familiar with the FTC guidelines and some that are likely learning about them for the first time. Can you give us a brief overview of what they are, inclusive of this new update?
Sure. And thanks very much for having me. It's great to be here with all of you. So these new guidelines are actually what the word says. They're guidelines. It's not a new law. This is an interpretation of an existing law, and the law by our Federal Trade Commission, which regulates deceptive and unfair practices that are targeted towards consumers. So that is the law. The law is that you can't engage in practices that are deceptive or unfair. And deception might mean misrepresenting something to a consumer, saying a product does one thing, but when it actually does something differently. And unfairness might be doing something that could potentially harm a consumer. In the privacy world, that might be having a security breach. Now, what deception and unfairness mean in practice, the FTC gives us guidelines to help us understand what that means. So these endorsement guidelines are meant to explain to us, how do you comply with the law of not being deceptive or unfair when you're dealing with endorsements and testimonials? So it's, while I say it's not a law, this is what the FTC thinks their interpretation of the law is. So you do need to follow it because you're probably not going to win that argument that these guidelines aren't appropriate.
Yeah, that's really great, and appreciate the intro for our audience and explaining what the difference is between the law and then the FTC's role in them. So, Gary, another question for you. I want to contextualize this a bit further, as I'm sure I'm not the only one sometimes confused by like legalese. So what are the key changes in these new guidelines from the FTC that affiliate marketers need to be aware of? What is the impact to them?
Sure. And there's a lot. I could probably spend 20 minutes talking through all of them, but I'll try to go boom, 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 rapid through them so we can have more of a conversation. So they didn't really create any brand new disclosure structures, but what they did is realize that disclosures are not sufficient and we need to improve the way that disclosures are made. So they used to say that disclosures needed to be clear and conspicuous. To those of us in the legal world, that's a common standard, means that someone needs to be able to see it. They've changed the standard from clear and conspicuous to unavoidable, meaning the consumer must see this. There can't be any option where the consumer skips the disclosure and doesn't know that it's there. So that means disclosure should not be, through a secondary link. They should not be, gray on white backgrounds or things like that. It really has to be what that word says, unavoidable. They've also said that you may need to make multiple disclosures because to make it unavoidable, you may need to do it more than once. So if this is in a video, you may need to make a disclosure at the beginning in a pre-roll. You may need to do it during the video. You may need to do it during a post-roll. So they really want, again, the consumer cannot miss these disclosures. They also said you need to speak to the specific audience to which the advertising or marketing message is directed. So a simple example, if the ad is in Spanish, then the disclosures need to be in Spanish. If the marketing messages are geared towards those who are of a certain generation, then you need to sort of speak in their language, whether they are elderly or young. So again, making it in a manner so that the consumer understands that this is a disclosure that they should pay attention to. Another thing, and I'm almost halfway through, so I'll get this done quickly. We've all been seen hashtags that say hashtag sponsored or hashtag spawn or hashtag promo. And the FTC thinks that the current wave of hashtags is not sufficient. It's not explaining enough to the consumer. So instead of just having hashtag sponsored, they might want to see hashtag sponsored by XYZ company and have a little more detail, again, so that somebody understands. They've also talked about reposting, that if you repost something that you've seen online, you're basically adopting that message. So if the disclosures were insufficient in the initial posting, if you repost it without making better disclosures, you've adopted those insufficient disclosures. Then they also got into some details about things that have been in the a thorn in the side of the FTC for many years, like talking about a product that might have a certain benefit for consumers, but the results are not typical, and really explaining in more detail, what do you mean results are not typical? What was unusual about this consumer? You know, how come, you know, they lost, you know, 50 pounds in 3 days? I want to lose 50 pounds in 3 days. You need to explain why these results are not typical. And the last thing I'll say is they also talked a lot about fake reviews online. And they talked about it in every perspective, whether you are the one posting fake reviews or others are posting fake reviews to your social channels or blogs, that it's your job to make sure that you don't promote the fake reviews, that they don't have fake reviews that misrepresent what the typical consumer's experience with your products, because some platforms will allow you to pull reviews down and boost other ones. So you could become liable for someone else's fake reviews. With that, I'll stop for a minute because, again, there's a lot of different parts there that we could all dig into.
No, I really appreciate you sharing that oversight, though. It is a lot, but I think goes back to your answer in the first question is that ultimately this disclosure now needs to be explicit and unavoidable and really comprehensive. You know, Jen, I'd love to hear a bit from you now. We hear from a lot of our creators that they struggle to find this balance between authentic recommendations and advertorial content in general. And then disclosure obviously adds another layer. So it'd be great to get your take on how you've incorporated disclosure into your content so far.
Yeah, and thank you for having me here. I was laughing at your intro. Everyone's excited to talk about this. But it is really important. And I think that, at least in my experience in the influencer and content creator world, you know, it's kind of, you know, we know about the FTC and if, you know, we try to follow the guidelines. But what I find is when I work with large brands, I recently did a campaign with a large agency. Everything you were talking about, Gary, was you had to have the disclosure on the text on the screen. You also had to have it the first, you know, the guidelines were, you know, the first few words, like you were saying, it can't be hidden. And then you also needed to add, you know, the brand partner, like hashtag brand partner. And it seemed messy, but I could tell they were, following the guidelines and really, you know, it wasn't an option for me. It was a paid sponsorship. So you have to follow their guidelines or the ad doesn't run. And so that way it's really nice. But then, so Gary, to give you the context, I do a lot of local influencer marketing for local restaurants in Chicago, but then I also work with national and international brands. And there's a big difference in who's requiring disclosures and things like that. And I think the one part that a lot of influencers struggle with is, for example, if I'm invited to a restaurant for a meal, they're not paying me, but my meal was, you know, comped. I tipped out of my own pocket. And it's, you know, after, you know, looking at the guidelines, you know, it seems like I need to be writing, thank you, such and such restaurant for having me in. But it's not a paid sponsorship. So I think from the influencer world, there's so many different variations. It's obvious when it's a big brand deal and a big agency, but then when you get to the local side of it, things kind of get a little fuzzy and your followers don't want to see a paid ad in general. They don't want to see that. So everyone's trying to work around how do we be authentic while meeting the disclosure guidelines and, you know, delivering authentic content. So it's a balance.
Yeah, I was going to add, I mean, absolutely. And, you know, the local marketers, they don't have a large legal department and staff. Right? So they're just like, I just want a great marketing campaign. Let's go.
Yeah. You have a local restaurant group that's like, hey, we want to create some exposure in the neighborhood. Come on in. Right. They don't have you to talk to find out.
Exactly. But the large brands, you know, and they are concerned about being targets of an investigation. Yeah. So they will have compliance guidelines about what should be done. And yes, if you're getting anything free, whether, you know, it's a, you know, you review, you know, video game consoles and you get a free game console, you're supposed to say, I got that for free, because the point is that the consumer needs to understand, all right, I need to listen to your review with that in mind, that you got this for free. And you may want more stuff for free. So you're not going to say, this is the biggest piece of junk I've ever played a game on, because that company's never going to send you anything free again.
That's a great point. I actually know a couple influencers here in Chicago who will post negative reviews. They will say, hey, this was like a 3 out of 10 experience. Yeah. I don't do that, but then it kind of makes me think, what if I did? Then by default, when I am endorsing something, it's only because I really do love it. I mean, I will not put things on my page. For example, I had a company that makes like cake mixes in a box. Packaging's gorgeous. Everyone was so nice from the brand that, can we send this to you? I made the cake the other day. I don't like it. Like, I just don't like it. And so now I have to email the brand to say, thank you for sending me this, but I don't feel comfortable posting, because I'm not going to give you a negative review. I don't, that's not the brand I want to have out there in the market. So, but my audience does know that. They don't know how many things I've turned down because I'm not a fan.
Yep.
And so, yeah, it's really interesting.
Yeah. I mean, while it's all like, you know, legal issues and, you know, compliance, at the end of the day, what the FTC is concerned about, like, look, just tell the consumer what's going on and they'll make a decision. And, you know, I mean, they'll decide, all right, do I believe this person? Do I like this product? Do I understand why they're on screen saying this? And that's what it's really all about to the FTC, that they think consumers are still confused. Now, not to be contrary to everything we're saying here right now, but at the very beginning, I said the law is to not be deceptive or unfair. Yeah. These guidelines are not the law. You could argue that if you violated the guidelines, to say, well, that's not the law, and go to court, fight with the FTC in court, spend millions of dollars in legal fees, and who knows, maybe you win, maybe you don't, because the legal standard is deceptive and unfairness. The legal standard is not the guidelines. That's just what the FTC views the law as meaning. But I don't think many people want to spend that money.
No, I don't think they do either. And I found it interesting when you talked about the part where it said speak in their language, as in if they're of a certain generation, Gen Z, Boomer, you know, whatever the generation is, because that is really crucial. You can use acronyms that you know that only certain demographics know what they are. Like, I can put, you know, link for my outfit on my LTK. A bunch of people know that means like to know it, but there is a whole set of the audience that has no idea what that abbreviation is. So
and also,
that makes a lot of sense.
I think they put that in there specifically because of children. And they're basically saying, you know, when you make a disclosure to explain to a child that this is paid or sponsored, you got to think about what the audience is, you know, who's going to be reading that. And again, you know, the other end of the spectrum, you know, elderly, you know, I mean, hey, I mean, I have, you know, 80-year-old, you know, relatives who, you know, look at things online, and maybe they view disclosures differently. So it's all about making it clear. And, you know, this idea about making it clear to the consumer is not a new concept. It's just in new mediums, it's a little more confusing. Because when you turn on your television and you see Tiger Woods swinging the golf club and talking about Nike, you know he's paid for that. Yeah. You don't need a disclosure. But the FTC still believes that people are confused online about influencers. Again, going back to my argument, if you want to pay a lawyer millions upon millions of dollars, maybe you could argue that people are not really deceived. They know that these are influencers and they get benefits for doing this. But again, most people don't want to spend that time and effort to make that fight.
Yeah, absolutely. Jen, I want to go back to something you said earlier around how your audience and audiences in general, they don't like ads. They don't like when you disclosed. And, you know, you made a point earlier, you're known for authentic content. So even if you're not giving negative reviews, your followers know that you're only endorsing something that you're passionate about, and you would use yourself whether or not you paid for it. So how do you navigate that audience response to negative disclosures and negative feedback? What has been, like, what have you seen has successfully worked, or things you're like, oh, I've tried this when trying to explain disclosure and it hasn't been perceived as well as I was expecting?
So it's interesting because for me right now, I take a very limited amount of paid campaigns for that exact reason. Unless I truly, truly believe in the product and financially it makes sense for me to put that out there. And, you know, Sam, you don't really get many comments on the paid videos. The views are really low. The comments are low. The likes are low. It's just consumers don't like it. And what I've done, well, a lot of brands, especially the larger ones, will put paid advertising behind the video to amplify that reach. And so, you know, I still find it doesn't get as many comments, but you get the reach because they're putting money behind it. And I'm okay with that right now because I don't take that many paid campaigns. So it's, I don't know when that time comes. You know, my goal is to make this my full-time job and I will need to take more campaigns, you know, more brand deals. And so I haven't quite figured that out yet, honestly.
Yeah.
How I will do that.
And I'm sure it's probably a learning curve too. Not something like you do it once and then that is the magic.
Right.
Solution on this is how I handle this situation now when I get pushback from my audience. So I want to carry along the same vein with a question for you both. You know, we've seen several platforms add disclosures as a feature, you know, particularly Instagram and TikTok. Jen, we know you have a very active presence on. Gary, I'd love to hear, like, from your perspective, how compliant are these disclosure tools? Are they sufficient enough or should influencers be doing more? It sounds like it's yes, they should be doing more.
Yeah, and I actually saved my comments on that point because I thought we might talk about that. The FTC did say in the guidelines that you can't rely on the platform tools. Now, they didn't comment specifically on specific platforms and say some are better than others, but they're basically saying to the marketers, it's your job to make sure that the disclosures are made appropriately. And yes, platforms give you tools and that's wonderful, but that's not a get out of jail free card. You can't argue to the FTC, well, I use, you know, Instagram's, you know, disclosure tool, or I use TikTok's tool, so I'm fine, okay? No, they will go through the exact same analysis. Was it unavoidable? Did the consumer understand it? You know, were the hashtags appropriate? Was it speaking to the right audience? They will go through all of that analysis regardless of the fact that use the platform tools. So my advice to folks is, you know, using the platform tools can be very good, but you need to look at them independently and look at them in light of all these other requirements and decide, do I need to do anything more than what the platform is giving me?
It's interesting. So you're talking I have a presence on, active presence on TikTok and Instagram. Most of my paid campaigns are on TikTok and they have definitely updated their, you know, tools within. And I noticed recently, like, I've tagged brands in the past. A lot of it is to get their attention, to be like, hey, I like your product. Hi, look at my video. Maybe we can work, you know, it's essentially kind of like pitching them, right? Like in a subtle way. But I've noticed now that when I tag a brand, TikTok prompts me to click a button that says that it's sponsored content just for tagging the brand.
Interesting.
Yes. And that's very new. Maybe in the past like few months, probably since these new guidelines came out. And yeah, I find it really interesting because I'm just tagging to, you know, just make it easier for my followers to be like, oh, here's the brand. And so it's really interesting. And when you TikTok, at least, I haven't done as many paid campaigns on Instagram. The second you mark it as you tag it, you do a hashtag sponsored, that triggers them to say, you know, you have to toggle on this to show that it's, you know, a paid sponsorship. They seem to have I'm not an attorney, but they seem to kind of, in a good way, not overdo it, but they really seem to be covering their bases once you mention a brand and, you know, acknowledge that it's paid.
Yeah, I'd say the platforms are certainly very concerned because if it gets to the point that their platform is deemed to be insufficient in their platform tools and the FTC brings enforcement actions, then influencers are all going to leave that platform and go to a different platform that they view as compliant. Because, I mean, the reality is the influencers want to rely on the platforms. You know, influencers are like, look, I'm using the platform because you have these tools. I don't want to sit here and have to interpret all this myself. You guys are the experts. You got the big compliance teams. So I'd rather the platform have good tools.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of pieces of like putting out a paid sponsorship. You know, you've already worked at the brand, you've worked with their guidelines as far as messaging, as far as, you know, just what the creative looks like. And then there's the whole legal, and you're like, well, okay, I'm not a lawyer here. Yeah. I'm really hoping that the platform has this figured out. So they don't have an attorney, you know, for every single ad that I put out there.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's really good insight from you both. Gary, and Jen, please feel free to correct me if I'm perceiving this incorrectly, but from a creator perspective, you know, you are taking a lot of direction and lead from the brands and the platforms that you're using as a way to educate yourself and ensure that your content is compliant. Gary, are there other recommendations and tips that you have for creators like Jen or for brands and agencies on how can they ensure everyone is meeting these new, you know, disclosure guidelines and making sure content is remaining compliant?
Sure. And maybe getting to the last part about who could be liable, everyone in this chain here can be liable. It could be the brand, it could be the influencer, it could be the platform. So everyone's got to be doing the right thing. So what I would say is, you know, obviously, you know, as Jen said, you're working with a large brand. They're probably going to give you guidelines and say, here's what we expect you to do. If you're working with a smaller brand, then you need to think about these things on your own. It's a combination of making sure that everyone involved in this ecosystem is educated about what the best practices are. So, you know, let's just say from the perspective of a brand, if you're a brand, have a good contract with the influencer, have guidelines telling them what you expect them to do, and spot check. Go and follow up and see if they're doing the right thing. Now, if you're working with 1,000 influencers for your brand, you can't check every influencer in every post, but do some spot checking. So that's what I would do on the brand side. If you're on the influencer side, you know, if you're working with a very large brand, they may give you guidelines. Great. If they, when they give you the contract, read the contract, see what they expect of you, see what they think you're liable for versus what they are liable for, and make sure that you follow what they instruct. If you're an influencer working for a smaller brand, as Jen mentioned, like the local restaurant, they just say, go and get us some business and, you know, and build the hype for our new fantastic, you know, happy hour on Friday. So you're kind of on your own to make sure that you do it properly. So just because the brand hasn't told you to yes or no, do anything particular, don't realize that like, well, it's the brand's problem. I can do whatever I want. No, you need to think about all these guidelines in your head and take it upon yourself to make sure that you do the right thing online so that you don't get yourself and your client into trouble.
Yeah, that's great advice. Gary, would you say that that's been a bit of a change from since the FTC has kind of updated their guidelines? I watched the PMA webinar on the topic a few months ago, and one of the things that they had commented on as being a big change is before this update, obviously everyone was liable, but it seemed like the FTC was really going after bigger brands. And then those big brands were almost holding their smaller influencers accountable, but not the like large mass media houses of the world. And now we're seeing maybe less favoritism within the FTC on who they're targeting for lack of appropriate disclosure.
Yeah, I think it's true that there was a focus mostly on brands previously. And that has shifted over time, not just with these new guidelines that have come out, but to focus on the platforms and the influencers as well. I mean, there's been enforcement actions against, you know, Kardashians. I mean, you know, and of course, you know, the minute you do a deal with anyone, the last name Kardashian, you know, pay attention. So, I mean, you know, because there were some promotions where disclosures were not properly made. And the FTC always likes to bring cases that will have a deterrent effect and get press and get notice. So they probably don't want to go after the small little restaurant, you know, on the south side of Chicago because, you know, people may not pay attention to it. But if it's a huge celebrity or a huge brand or a huge platform, then they are more likely to go after it because it's going to get the press and notoriety and be a loud message to the industry about what you should and should not do. Because look, regulators can't go after every bad act. I talk to clients all the time about things that they should do properly online. And they say, well, here's these other 10 companies who are doing it wrong. And yes, the truth is not everyone is doing it right. And the regulators don't have the time to go after everybody. So the larger entities tend to be the targets, but anyone in reality could be a target.
Well, thank you both for joining us today. I think this conversation's been really insightful and our audiences, I'm sure, have found it valuable. Before we wrap up, though, I do want to ask each of you a final question. So Jen, let's start with you. From your perspective, with all of the changing disclosure guidelines, Are there trends or an impact that you foresee coming to influencer marketing practices down the road? You know, how do you think creators can continue to adapt their strategies to stay compliant, but still maintain that authenticity?
I think it's really a variety of your content and making sure that you are showing organic content that has no affiliate, no sponsor, nothing in your platform, so that when you do have that brand partnership or affiliate partnership, you know, your audience can tell the difference. But, you know, what I've started to notice as a trend is, let's say there's a brand that I talk about frequently, and then I get the paid sponsorship. I find that my followers are congratulating me. They know it's an ad, but they know that I've been talking about this brand for, you know, whatever length of time, and they're happy. So I think it's continuing to build the relationship with your audience, the trust with your audience, and just in the social media world, you have to evolve. Things are changing every single day on each platform, legally, things like that. And yeah, I think just keep learning and not being stagnant in, you know, well, these were the rules before, but just keep up with it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's pretty much great advice for anything you're doing, as well as don't remain stagnant.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And Gary, finally, question for you. So we've obviously largely discussed disclosure within influencer marketing, but you know, there's always constant changes within the affiliate landscape. There's new platforms like X, AI-generated content, general privacy updates, all of these things could warrant their own podcast episode and discussion. But what's your best advice for how our listeners can stay ahead of these obstacles and informed and remain compliant?
Yeah, there are so many issues going on. You know, we talk about influencer marketing, but AI is becoming a huge issue in terms of intellectual property ownership and infringement issues. And then privacy has always been a very big issue in terms of collecting data. And we have so many new privacy laws in the U.S. So it can be daunting. There's a lot to keep up on. You know, there's lots of media outlets and industry services that you can read to keep up on these things. My law firm, Davis & Gilbert, publishes alerts and articles. You can see them on our website. You can reach out to me and I can put you on our lists for alerts. So it's unfortunate in the marketing world, it's getting more complex. It's not getting easier.
Well, thank you both again for joining us today. And that does bring us to the end of this episode. So, Gary, should our listeners want to contact you for more advice and contact you directly, how can they do that?
So you think somebody really wants to contact a lawyer? Well, okay, if that happens, that's great.
If they're in trouble, yeah, probably.
Or to stay out of trouble. You want to stay out
there
of trouble.
Go.
So you can find me, my contact information on our website, dglaw.com, as in davisgilbertlaw.com. You can certainly find me on LinkedIn, Gary Kiebel. And yes, I'm on social platforms, other platforms as well, although I'm not an influencer. So, but you can find me online. I'm just not as cool as Jen.
Cool in different ways. Jen, I know I obviously follow you on Instagram and TikTok, but similarly, if anyone listening wants to follow up with you for partnerships or just more questions and advice, what's another way that they can get in touch with you?
Yeah, you can email me, contact@itsmejenwhite.com, and I will, you know, be happy to speak to people. Yeah.
Well, before we sign off, just a couple of quick announcements I want to make. So we've just announced the dates for our global think tank events happening in H1 next year, with the season kicking off in Chicago on April 29th and 30th for A1 and ShareASL Think Tank. So keep an eye out on our social channels for more details on how to purchase tickets, and I hope to see at least some of you in Chicago this spring. Second, if you missed it, A1's inaugural Partner Top 10s article has been published. So this is produced by our global publisher team, and these roundups showcase the top 10 partners every advertiser and agency should know around a specific sector or theme. And this first one is focusing on sustainability. And lastly, if you've enjoyed this episode of A1 Talks, I'd appreciate if you head over to Apple or Spotify and give us a review or rating. You can also subscribe or listen to each of our previous episodes. And if you have any feedback or suggestions for future episodes and content, then get in touch. We'd love to hear from you. You can reach out to me on LinkedIn or Rob Davidson, who's my co-host. Thanks again for joining us today, and I hope you'll come back for our November episode. Goodbye.